Good morning, planet Earth. It's still morning. It's 11:47 a.m. I woke up at the crack of dawn. That means I could see dawn's crack. It is June the 16th, 2026, right before noon. And I wanted to talk about a couple things before I went too far down the road. In the last year, I've taken a greater interest in my health, to my own chagrin. I can talk to the bill companies, the medical bill collecting companies for the hospitals and the surgical centers and the clinics. But simply put, people said, Dan, you need to have an annual physical. If you don't have an annual physical, that's no good. And I went ahead and did that. I got my annual physical. And now I owe a couple of institutions a lot of money I simply don't have. And it stresses me the fuck out. I have another sort of follow-up set up at a local free clinic, and I think I wish I would have stuck with that. Am I super happy about the doctor? No. Am I super happy about any of it? No. Dr. Volcano, and we're going to call him Dr. Volcano for now to protect his innocence. Dr. Volcano is about 250 years old, and he was good enough to prescribe for me a heart, well, not really a heart, a blood pressure medication that I think is helping. So that's great. But in terms of the testing and the probing and all the other stuff that goes along with it, it simply stresses me the fuck out to the point that I simply don't want to go for another visit for another fucking year. There's nothing in my life that indicates I need to. I don't have any blood in my stool. I'm not interested in anything in my urine. I'm trying to do the things that make sense, which is eat healthier, trying to do that. Lose weight, trying to do that. Exercise more, trying to do that. Not really succeeding, but trying. But in general, the going to see the doctor, the going to meet with the doctor, the going to the physical, scientific fucking lab testing for the doctor stresses me the fuck out. And I'll freely admit some of this might be my own crazy. You know, there are people who would say there's a diagnostic category for every form of mental illness. And there's probably in the DSM 4 or 5 or 6 or 29 or whatever volume of the standard descriptions and diagnoses of mental illness we're on by now. But I have no doubt there is a classification for somebody that has a horrid, stressful, fearful feeling about going to see the doctor. And in some ways, that's me. But on the other hand, in the last year, the thing that stressed me out about going to see the doctor is the economics of it. I mean, do I think that somebody should get stuff for free? No, nobody really should. But if you deconstruct our society just a little bit and look at, I don't know, just start with the military-industrial complex, and then you can end with the whole housing sector pyramid scheme, and you find a lot of people with hands in the pot. So when people give speeches about how, well, nobody should get anything for free, I don't think you should get your money for free. I don't think your cash should be subsidized by the subjugation of other societies. And up until recently, and the jury's still out, much of your dollar has been subsidized by essentially stealing from other countries. And that's probably going to end one way or the other. So when people talk about freebies and handouts, I really think they're very confused. Our entire society, it's a very grifter, neo-Stalinist society, is built on handouts and grifts. And just about everybody has a hand in somebody's pocket. I don't care if it's a farmer, I don't care if it's the logger, I don't care if it's the fisherman or the computer person. Just about every industry, every sector is getting some type of subsidy or funding or special gimme. And you talk about a guy like Elon Musk and you say, well, the guy's a trillionaire. Big fucking deal. That's a trillion printed dollars that at some point is going to return to its real value, which is pretty much nothing. So, and frankly, people like him know this. They know that that money is going to be worthless at some point, and it's not the distant future. But yeah, way off topic. I have a morbid relationship with the medical. I went for a walk today. That's good for the health, right? I went for a walk. I walked on down to the grocery store. Went on down to the grocery store. I had $6 in my checking account. I wanted to feel rich, like a little rich bitch. So I went on down to the grocery store and I got the what I could get for $6, and I'll let you in a little secret. This may not be a secret, but no matter what grocery store you go to, it could be the dollar store. It could, I don't know if you'd call the dollar store a grocery store. It could be the, you know, grocery outlet. It could be Costco. It could be Safeway. It could be Walmart, Sam's Club, Aldi. I don't fucking care. It could be your own local special grocery store. And if you're not aware of this, you need to be aware of this. $6 doesn't get you much. Maybe it gets you a little bit of some type of meat, maybe some sausages, and then you spent it all. Maybe you can get yourself a loaf of bread, and then you spent it pretty much. Maybe you can get yourself some milk. I don't know about a gallon, but maybe you can get a gallon, half a gallon for, you know, $6. And you can get some garbage. All kinds of garbage is available for $6. You can get corn chips, you know, two of those for $6 pretty much. There's that yellow corn chip I get sometimes for making nachos. And those you can get for $2.99. They even print it on the fucking plastic. $2.99. And then I get done getting what I can get for $6, and this is going to sound fantastical. This is going to sound crazy. This is going to sound out of a science fiction movie. But you may find this hard to believe. It doesn't take long to spend $6 at a grocery store at this point. I mean, you could just stand there, and you could. Although that's going to bring the security guard by, or the other loss prevention officer, or any number of other freaks there. They're getting paid to make sure nobody steals the potato chips and the Gillette shavers. So I get done rather quickly and abruptly. It doesn't take long to spend that $6. Doesn't take long to spend those $6. Not long at all. I spend the $6. I go to the checkout. I check out at the self-checkout. I don't know how much longer those will exist because I think they found out that human beings are better at keeping track of the food. Oh, but the robots. I know about the robots. I know. It's part of the cognitive dissonance that's settling in on people. The robots will take care of us, but then they'll take over and they'll take the nuclear weapons. Sure, sure, sure. That is a great lesser catastrophe storyline. But I got done at the checkout. And I went out to wait for the bus. And there was this weird schizo guy, homeless, I believe homeless, because he was begging for money. He had his house on his back. But he wasn't really that weird looking. In fact, if he hadn't said a word, if he hadn't asked for any money, I would have thought he was just one of these rambling hikers from Canada. Just got off the ferry. Gonna head up to Hurricane Ridge. Gonna take pictures for grandma in Toronto. Fuck you, Canada. Yeah, he could have been anybody until he opened his mouth and he left all mystery behind. But he started spouting the craziest shit, like he was talking to somebody, but there wasn't anybody there. He didn't have an earpiece. He had a mobile phone, but it was in his pocket. And he was just talking into space. And he was talking about, you know, stuff that's going on in the world and how he wanted to get that cheeseburger. And there was a woman who looked at him, but then the guy came by and offered him a cigarette. And I began to think maybe he is tapped into a frequency. to receive a radio frequency, just about any chunk of metal, even that chunk of metal in your head, can pick up a radio frequency, almost like Lucille Ball. Or what, Tippi Hedren? Anyways, to pick up a radio frequency, just about any chunk of metal can do that. But to transmit, it's a lot like a musical instrument. The actual antenna has to be tuned to a specific frequency, a wavelength and a frequency. These things are connected. It's kind of inverse. The bigger the wavelength, the lower the frequency. The shorter the wavelength, the higher the frequency. It actually kind of makes sense if you know your trigonometry. But if you're just thinking about it, maybe it doesn't make sense. People have antennas, like the Navy, specifically the United States Navy and the Department of Defense. They have super low frequency antennas that are so low frequency that the antennas themselves stretch for like a half a mile. You know, sometimes they stretch a long distance and they transmit a very long wave, maybe a half a mile wave at a very low frequency. So a big long wave at a low frequency. So the submarine dudes can pick up a message. Now it's not very high bandwidth. You know, clearly there is an information relationship between these things. Now, do I think the people at NSA have figured out a few tricks? Of course they have. There might be a way to, you know, put more information into the wavelength than just the information we know we can do now mathematically. But the reality is frequency and information are connected. The higher the frequency, the more information you can send. That's more wavelengths per second. That's why back in the 90s, they started talking about CPUs in terms of things like hertz, wavelength, frequency. Because it's not just about processing power, it's about how quickly you can process. It's about how fast that wave moves, essentially. And in terms of speed, it's really about frequency. Because the speed of light's constant, right, Mr. Einstein? Yeah, it's constant. But what if there's an antenna that is out there someplace in the universe, and it stretches for hundreds of thousands of miles. It produces a wave that has an upper and lower sideband that stretches for maybe a million miles. And that frequency pulses very, very slowly. In the depths of space, it was built by aliens. Perhaps they died out a billion years ago, but for them it was 1.3 slowtons. And they built a beacon, some type of beacon system to send out the truth of the universe on a really, really, really low frequency on a very, very big wave. And that crackling in the darkness is what the crazy people hear. They hear it deep at night, like when I'm falling asleep and I got no time to keep. I'm like Roy Schneider in Blue Thunder, checking my sanity with a wristwatch. What do you check yours with? Oh, a dipstick, huh? I don't know. I don't have anything deeper to add. It was weird. It wasn't really strange in the sense that, how can I put this? It wasn't unexpected. Like everywhere where there's a town or a city, you got homeless. And you've had them forever. We've always had people who've had no place to live. It's just there happens to be more of them now. And we are lying to ourselves and we're lying to each other about the distance between ourselves and those people. The reality is the guy could come up to me and say, hey, do you have a buck to spare? And the reality is I just spent my last $6 at the grocery store, buddy. But I get paid again in a couple weeks, right? And I say, right, because you got to take it with faith, right? You have to take it with faith. It is an act of faith that check will be there. There's no guarantee. None of this is really guaranteed. They'll tell you it is, but it's not. It's only in extreme situations that we figure this out. So here are your Zero Hedge headlines as of just that afternoon, June the 16th, 2026. Is the compute is scarce narrative starting? Real doubts have arisen. San Francisco eventually comes back to Earth. Stone signals, hardline Israelis, doing IPOs, Qatar Energy, calls on Putin to calm people about the oil experts because the Supreme Court rejects the fact that you have herpes. Three things that can spoil the signs that the FBI foils as alleged suicide drones target GPUs as Japan raises the price of lawyers for Elon Musk and some type of RIM-RAM, DRAM issue with China getting a RIM job. Those are your Zero Hedge headlines. And if you say, well, Dan, that doesn't make any sense, guess what? Guess what, fucker? It makes more sense than the headlines themselves. Fuck you. That's it. That's what you get for the news. So what's been big in the news since this last weekend is the Memorandum of Understanding. And just to get that out of the way, to pull off that Band-Aid, a Memorandum of Understanding isn't really much of anything. It's pixie dust. In negotiation terms, it's like saying we kind of promise to start talking about promises. It's not really a peace. It is something that you probably would have during a ceasefire or an armistice. Like, for example, the armistice that's been on the Korean Peninsula since, 1953. It's not a peace. There's no peace on the peninsula. Periodically, the North Koreans remind the South of this, and periodically, the South remind the North. But there's no peace there. They'll still launch weapons at each other. The North Koreans still operate south of the DMZ with special ops forces. They've been doing it for a long, long time, and they've gotten good at it. So when people say things like, well, it's a ceasefire or an armistice, understand that does not mean peace. It doesn't. It just means that hostilities have stopped for the most part. That's the key message, too, for the most part. It doesn't mean all hostilities have ended. It does not mean peace. The Memorandum of Understanding is worthless by itself, but the fact that we're still being fed the story that there are these 14 points that the Iranians agree to and supposedly Trump doesn't, but does, and some of his rhetoric has shifted. I'll freely admit, I was listening to some Trump quotes. And before we get into that, the Trump quotes, I put a link to a YouTube video. I'm not recommending the edgelord, Daniel Davis. He's okay. I don't know. As far as edgelords go, he's okay. But once he starts talking about the COVID, he goes to bioweapon land and he loses me. But he seems to be interested in what's going on in the Iran situation, and many of his takes are pretty good. But at the beginning, he has a segment of Pete Hegseth. Or Hegmeth. I think if you watch the segment at the very beginning of the video, you'll get the idea that maybe Pete Hegseth is on meth. Maybe he's doing the meth and the crack, breaking the waffle back. But he sounds fucking batshit crazy. And there are a few other Pete Hegseth segments in this particular Daniel Davis video that are worth looking at later on. But yeah, he sounds crazy. Some of Donald Trump's takes over the last, like, let's say 72 hours have been kind of almost reasonable, especially when it comes to the state of Israel. But it's hard to believe. It's not that it wouldn't be good to believe. I would in my heart love to believe that somehow this signals that everything is A-okay or that the Persian Gulf situation is no big deal. I'm not sure what the Persian Gulf situation is to begin with. If you follow me in the sense of listening to my podcast, you already know I have lots of questions about what we're fed in terms of the media, especially when it comes to these wars. I think because it involves blood, people instantly assume it's true. It's like what happened in Butler, PA. Is it plausible that an innocent person was murdered to make a fake assassination look realistic? It's not only plausible, but think about 9/11. I mean, that was a, in my opinion, absolutely legit false flag. And we may have, in fact, killed thousands of people to make it look real. And COVID is the same. I have no doubt that a lot of old people were poisoned just to make the COVID look kind of real. That doesn't mean it was real. It does mean, though, that red dye and corn syrup only go so far. If you want the patina of tragedy, nothing works like real tragedy. Okay? So wars always get assumed to be true because who would want to put on a fake war, right? Or even a kind of fake war? where maybe people are being killed every day, but they're really just being sacrificed to some kind of op. And this implies that both sides, like in the story Catch-22, that both the Germans and the Allies are working together, and they're scheduling their bombing raids. And it sounds insane, but in the case of the Ukraine war, and in my opinion, what's going on in Iran, with Iran, we might be looking at the same thing. But let's step back and play pretend. I want to play pretend. I have a helmet for time travel. You know this. I have a time helmet. I also have an imagination helmet. But even more powerful than the time helmet or the imagination helmet is the let's play pretend helmet. Let's put on the pretend helmet. Let's play pretend that the situation between the United States, Iran, and Israel is a legitimate geopolitical event. It was not constructed. It is not an op. There's no coordination. It is organic. The real question I've had since the end of March is, why did the Iranians agree to a ceasefire? Now, you can make the argument, well, Dan, maybe they were damaged more than we know, and blah, 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 and some of that makes sense. But there is zero evidence, if you're an Iranian, that the United States or the Israelis have ever or will ever keep a deal, any kind of deal. If they start bombing you during negotiations and kill your negotiation team, that implies logically that these are not people you can trust. Here's another thing too. Initiative in warfare is rare. It is rare. It is not just about material. It's not just about how much ammo you have, or in this case, how many missiles you have. It's not just about people. It's not just about one dimension. It's about all the dimensions of war. Initiative is rare. And when you have it, you don't want to give it up, but you certainly don't want to give it up on purpose. And for some strange reason, at the end of March of this year, the Iranians who had initiative decided to give it up. And you could say, well, Dan, they closed the Strait of Hormuz. Well, that was already a done deal. The real question is, why didn't they cut the fiber cables? Why didn't they take out essentially all the key targets in the state of Israel? They could have. They could have taken out all the key targets. There would have been no means by which they could have replaced their missile systems, because all of those logistical points would have been destroyed. Why did they stop? This doesn't mean I like war. This doesn't mean I like the Iranians, although I'm not a big fan of the state of Israel. This doesn't mean I hate them. It's just a question of, why did they stop? It doesn't really add up. Now, the argument people will make is, well, Dan, they needed to rearm. They wanted to get ready for the next phase. Fine. Here we are, supposedly on the verge of peace, on the verge of opening the strait, which we need to do, right? Because that's where all the fertilizer comes from and all the fuel, not all of it, but a significant portion, right? All the helium, most of it comes from there, right? That is the story we're told. So if you want to believe this is real, let's discuss what that means. Number one, it still doesn't fully explain why the Iranian op tempo changed. Maybe they're preparing for something. Just as likely, a good reason to change your op tempo is because the Ayatollah of rock and rolla, who declared the fatwa saying no nukes, is dead, which happened. We killed him. And so the new Ayatollah of rock and rolla can say, you know what? It seems like North Korea never gets attacked. It seems like Pakistan is kind of okay. And that state of Israel, huh? They're giant pieces of shit, but they're okay too. Maybe we need a nuke, you know, to hold people back. And so one potential explanation, despite all the bloviating of some edgelords, and there are a few of them out there who say, oh no, they'll never get a nuke. Never say never. It's not just the name of a Bond film that sucked, which it kind of did. But never say never. Just because we don't think they ever will doesn't mean they won't. You know, Jimmy Carter ostensibly won a Nobel Peace Prize for preventing the North Koreans from having a nuke. Yeah, except, you know, that never really happened. Now, did they take away his Peace Prize? No. In 1998, I think, or 99, when the Norks tested their first nuke and we confirmed it, they should have taken away that Peace Prize if things work the way they're supposed to work. But in reality, Jimmy Carter is remembered as having done that, even though in reality he did nothing. Never say never. If you think that they're never going to have a nuke, you're living in a fantasy world. Now, you can argue to me nukes aren't real, because at this point I am wondering too. It's a lot like the moon missions and other kinds of bullshit. It has a low enough frequency that one can ask the question, okay, explain to me why there isn't more of this. It's kind of like the space thing. You can talk about a million people on Mars all you want to, but if you look at the unique set of people who've been to quote-unquote space, better yet orbital space, better yet deep space, those numbers are still really small, or rookie numbers, as they say. Yeah. So we're pretending this is real. And here we are, and there's been a couple of months of relative peace and rearmament. The Israelis have been battling Hezbollah, right? That's the story. And what happens next? Now, if this deal is legit, like, and I don't believe it is, I don't believe this is going to happen, but let's pretend it does. Let me explain what I mean. I don't believe it's going to happen. I think at best this covers a few weeks. Like, maybe this gets, you know, Papa Blump. It got it through his birthday party, and maybe it gets him through his 250-year party, UFC-style, single-wide celebration on the, you know, on the, White House lawn. So maybe this gets him through all that. But I find it highly unlikely this deal lasts more than a month. Maybe it will. You know, I'm kind of surprised by the last couple months. The problem with the phony war is that the grifters are good at this. This is the problem that Iran is facing. They're facing the same problem that Gaddafi faced and Saddam Hussein faced. You can pretend, well, damn, they have hypersonics and they have drones. Sure they do. I don't doubt that they don't. They've proven it. But the question is that enough? In the phony war, is that enough? If you're not going to use your missiles, if you're not going to use your drones, they're useless. So how are you going to defeat the grifters in the grifter war? And the answer is you can't. The longer this lasts, the worse it is for Iran, okay? Especially if their financial future remains in kind of a gray twilight zone. Maybe they're going to be okay. Maybe they'll find a way out. It doesn't really add up to me why the Iranians are holding back. If you have the initiative and you have a strategic goal, you need to go after that goal until you've achieved it. And hopefully you don't culminate, which means you have resources left after. You have resources after you achieve victory. But this kind of situation, it only gives the grifters time to come up with some solution. And here's the thing. These grifters might be kind of inbred and stupid, but they have the money, which means they can hire people with high IQs. At some point, people being greedy are going to take the money and they're going to build something that's going to make the hypersonics and the drones less effective. Not zero effective, but less effective enough that won't be the edge any longer. And then what? Then what's your plan? You've given up your initiative. You've wasted time in war. Can you afford to waste time? Huh? Ask anybody. I've never been to combat. I've only ever been a peacetime soldier. And I can tell you from what I do know, you don't get to waste time at all, anytime. Not really. Even in ordinary life, the time you waste is a choice you make. It's okay to do it. People should relax. But at the end of the day, these are choices that have consequences. And in warfare, the consequences can be quite extreme. So let's pretend we're on our way to a real deal. If we're on our way to a real deal, this means that the petrodollar is effectively dead. How dead? It's hard to say. If you listen to Jim Rickards, he'll say, well, it'll be part of a market basket, which means maybe it only loses 30% of its value. Okay? 30%. That's going to suck a lot. But maybe it's just 30%. So maybe you only see a 15 to 20% increase in the cost of everything over the next year or so. And that's if you're lucky. If it's over, if the petrodollar is over, that means that the subsidy we get by making people use dollars to buy oil is over. And that means that bonus is over. And that means that prices could go up by double. And that's excluding other inflationary pressures that could be brought on by a reignition of a war in the Persian Gulf or any other type of, you know, calamity that could come down the pike. You know, they're talking about super El Niños. I don't know what the fuck a super El Nino is. I do know things are changing. And a lot of places, they're not very positive. But what's causing it? Who's causing it? Why is it happening? We can all just theorize as poor people. So the petrodollar, if this piece goes through, is over. Another thing that's over is that inherent protection of the state of Israel. It's over, okay? Our bases will be gone because there'll be no reason to keep them there and it'll be just a drain. We will have no extra money to give them, even if we wanted to. And the political perspective of people coming into the Congress and Senate, assuming you think the system works and I don't. But in one way or another, that's that sort of united, unquestioned support of the state of Israel, that's over. If the petrodollar is over, that's over. And if the dollar as a reserve currency is over, that's super duper over. And if you ask me, that's the conversation that they had. Mossad, CIA, probably the NSA, Federal Reserve, and all the spooks from all the 25 billion secret agencies, right? Who knows how many. In the summer of 2023, before 10/7, I think that's the conversation they had with the state of Israel. If you have business to take care of, you have a couple of years. You don't have a couple decades, you don't have a century, you have a couple years, and then it's over. Bottom line is this peace treaty, if it becomes a real thing, is super duper great for Iran, not so great for the United States, really, really bad for Israel. And again, I kind of think that's what's got to happen if we want peace. But folks, I don't think you understand that the dollar empire has given you a bonus. I don't think a lot of people do. I think my listeners probably do. A lot of Americans, a lot of ordinary people do not realize the bonus we get by going around the world and threatening to kill them. Kill people, which sounds crazy when you say it. That's crazy sounding, but that's basically it. So who knows? You can read on. I don't really want to feed this storyline anymore. But what I think is more likely if this is an organic conflict. So let's switch to the more likely, because I think it's fantasy land to think that the state of Israel is going to simply give up without a fight. There's one scenario where they, essentially the rats leave so quickly, no one's left at home. That is a scenario. But again, who knows? It's hard to know if everybody's just going to pick up and leave. They could. But let's talk reality. The people there, in a lot of cases, are a lot like the people in Jonestown. Towards the end, people did want to leave, but a lot of people wanted to stay and drink the Kool-Aid. And there is a mythology around things like Masada, in that Zionist sort of tradition of mythology around, you know, if we're righteous, if we're good, then it doesn't matter if we're doomed. So it's hard to say what people there would choose to do. I don't know. I think a lot of people in the state of Israel believe the propaganda so much that they will go down with the ship, probably enough people. So they don't have a choice. It's live or die for them. And in a scenario like that, the Samson option, which you've never heard of it, the Samson option, taking its name from the Old Testament, the Book of Judges time, the Samson option is where you go batshit crazy and just kill a bunch of people with nuclear weapons, you know. Just a bunch of people with nukes, you know. Yeah, you nuke them out. And it's not just that you nuke Iran. In the worst case, Samson option, they start taking out other grudges too. Like they have a list of grudges. Like they're gonna nuke Berlin. And again, it doesn't really matter what the truth is about how much the Germans are to blame. They'll probably nuke Moscow because for some reason a lot of these folks just hate Russians, period. So they're gonna nuke a lot of places and go, you know, cry, wah wah, nuke. That's the Samson option in the worst case. In the best case, it is they'll use nukes on Iran. And I think that scenario becomes very likely if this is a real conflict. Because they don't really have the conventional forces to do much else. And if the Iranians start using their missiles again, the conventional situation for Israel gets really bad really fast. Because then it becomes a question of, can they deal with Hezbollah, their indirect fires, and the indirect fires of Iran at the same time, and then add in the Yemenis. If you think this is a real conflict, that's essentially two long-range sources of indirect fires. You already have Hezbollah with short-range rockets and drones. If they can stay supplied, that's a lot for the IDF to deal with. Whether you like the Israelis or not, that situation becomes untenable. And God forbid, Turkey, Egypt, or both decide this is a lot of bullshit and said, we're done. We're not going to wait for you to use nukes. We're going to go in and we're going to finish this. if that happens, then the Israelis are in a pickle. And I kind of think that one way or the other, this is going to come down to, will the Israelis use nukes if the state of Israel is threatened? This is another way of saying that I don't think this peace is real. I think it's real enough to get through maybe the next few weeks. It's plausible that it's real enough to get through the election. Plausible. Again, I think that a lot of things are going sideways right now, and it's not just because of geopolitics. And if you take my position seriously, the geopolitics is, again, more smoke to cover up something else. Anyways, I've been talking a lot about great white sharks in the Puget Sound. I have a link to an article. I think I may read some of this if you're interested. This comes from KPQ, 101.7 FM, News Radio. It was written by Chris Hansen and published on 420 of this year. That's right, Pothead Day. Headline, Great White Shark Kara tracked near LaPush off Washington State coastline. A great white shark, Carcharodon carcharias, that's been trolling the depths of the Pacific Ocean off the west coast of the United States in recent months has now been tracked off the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. The 16-foot shark named Kara, had ostensibly been off the radar of marine biologists since April the 2nd, when she last pinged sensors off the coast of Northern California. Imagine living in her dystopia. Now, nearly a month later, Kara has been tracked in the waters near LaPush, Washington, where the great whites are especially uncommon. Huh, very uncommon. Kara's appearance as a digital blip on a radar screen comes in the wake of similar sightings of her near Oregon's Tillamook Bay, she's getting some cheese, in early February, as well as other parts of the Pacific off both Oregon and Northern California since late last year, when she was tagged by marine biologist Keith Poe on behalf of the Marine Conservation Science and Animal Torture Institute. Tagging. The nonprofit group, blah, blah, blah. The point is, Kara is being tracked. Now, folks, there is a lot of fear-mongering when it comes to sharks. I was a kid. I was like 5 years old when Jaws came out. And believe you me, it was a cultural phenom. A cultural phenom. I would argue as big a cultural phenom as the first Star Wars movie. In similar but different ways. Like, it was one of those movies that I think, it wasn't just that it had good special effects. It had a kind of cinematography that was more modern, more real, felt more real. And again, you know, this is post-Apollo, so probably everybody's cameras got better, hint, hint. Yeah. The story was good. It was essentially Moby Dick in a lot of ways, but it was a good story. I've never read Peter Benchley's book. I'm sure it's more than just a Moby Dick story. But it's a good story as it was translated to the film. And I enjoyed it as a kid, and as an adult, I still do. But a lot of paranoia about sharks came out of that movie. And a lot of it led to a lot of people just saying, we don't care if you kill sharks. And that's not a great attitude. I'm not saying you have to be friends with sharks. If sharks attack people, we should fight back. Clearly, we shouldn't let sharks, hunt humans. That's kind of critical here. But that doesn't mean we should go out and kill a bunch of sharks for their fins. And I'm not saying there should be a law against it, because I don't think you can pass laws against stuff like this or anything, really. I think it's more of a moral principle. Like, as a moral human being, you probably shouldn't just go out and wholesale kill a bunch of sharks if all you're going to do is cut off their fin. Now, that being said, that's not going to stop one person from cutting off the fin of a shark, ever. Do I think that we could see great whites in the Puget Sound? I believe almost with 100% certainty that we're going to see them, because the two main forces that keep them out, a healthy orca population and plenty of food elsewhere, and those things are gone. It's not to say that there's tons more food here, except for, kind of year round. If you get used to a flexible diet, right, Kara? Because you could go to West Beach during the hot summer and there's going to be a lot of human beings playing out in that water. and plenty of food, if you know what I mean. In fact, I think West Beach near Deception Pass would make a great setting for a Jaws remake. It would be perfect. It would be synced up with the times we're living in. It would be perfect. I'm sure that people would either be offended or search for ways to be offended. And on that mark as well, I don't really care. People are always going to be offended by something. Next topic, right? Dan, what are you talking about? People always going to be, people are always, always, always going to be offended by something. There have been, and there's a link to a news article, you can read about it, and there's other information out there, but there have been significant heat waves in India during the summer, the last few years, and it's been significant enough that one of the ways just about everybody in India, especially those living in cities, can deal with this is by, you know, the fact that at night things cool down. So at night things cool down and you can sleep and you can get through it. But in reality, these heat waves are bringing something relatively new. At night, it's not cooling down. And so the body doesn't really get any rest. You're constantly dealing with heat. Now, if you have air conditioning, you're probably okay. I mean, air conditioning comes in many different kinds. Some's good, some's bad. But any is better than nothing if you're in a heat wave. I don't know how much of this is real. I mean, I am cautioning every person right now to be careful of the hype. However, just because something is being hyped or manipulated doesn't mean it's not real. It could in fact be real. We could be dealing with, right now, the beginnings, the edge of something called Hot House Earth. But if that's true, it's just the beginning of that transition. And the key word is transition. Hot House Earth is an equilibrium state. We haven't gotten there yet. And if you're thinking it's gonna take hundreds of years to get there, it probably won't. It probably will take more than a few years. It could take a decade or two, but it won't take hundreds of years. And the period of time going from where we're at to Hot House Earth, the actual transition could be quite brutal. It could be more than one decade of the most severe weather any human has ever seen. And it's not just about floods and droughts, it's everything. That's how bad it could be. We don't really know yet. We have studied in the quote-unquote fossil record. We've studied the Earth, the geology, going back long enough that we can theorize about things like the Paleo-Eocene thermal maximum. And we can theorize about how bad it was and how quickly it happened. But we don't really know. We have little bits of fragments of things. And in terms of ordinary people, this is what's critical to you and I, we really don't know because we get fed whatever truth they think we can handle or they want to give us. That's the truth too. So before you get suckered into these stories, do your own work. You know, I have been reaching out to contacts about what's going on where they live in the United States. And for the most part, what people have reported has been consistent. And where it's been inconsistent, I've been able to check with other sources. So I have been able to, in my own way, create an informal network of a few people who can tell me kind of what's going on. And the general impression is things aren't that great. It, you know, it's a little too hot, a little too dry. Some places, way too hot, way too dry. As far as the water crisis goes, and that's another subject that gets kind of manipulated, I don't know. We're going to get to that subject before the end, but I don't know, folks. Right now, we're being told that the major reservoirs in the Southwest and Texas, that the major reservoir systems aren't doing so well, that the major river systems are not doing so well, that there just wasn't enough snow in the mountains. And for the most part, you can think of mountains as many things. But in ordinary triple state Earth, mountains are also water towers, because in ordinary triple state Earth, where you have permanent liquid, you know, gas and solid water, in that world, you do get a buildup of snow on the tops of mountains, and that acts as a buffer, in essence, when it comes to hydrology. It's a store. It's a buffer. During the summer, the spring, the summer, it melts, and you have from that the water that you can farm with, that you can drink, that keeps you alive. But right now, if you go on YouTube, you'll see nothing but hours and hours of videos about how that these all these reservoirs are drying up and it's the end of the world. And one of the things many of them will do is say, well, it's all because of an agreement old people made. You know, here's the thing. That's when they lose me, because that could be true. It could very well be true. It's all because of some stupid agreement, and that people planned for a world that didn't match reality. But how is that different from saying reality doesn't match the world you planned for? You see, it's a lot of reverse thinking. It's a lot of Yoda bullshit. But by telling you that version of the story, you can say, oh, well, then it must have a Hollywood ending. No, it doesn't. It doesn't have a Hollywood ending. You know, it's kind of like the freaks who said, oh, if we protect the spotted owl, we'll save the old growth in the Pacific Northwest, huh? And where do you think the logging went? It went to places that can never be replaced. You want to see something sad? See an orangutan in a clear cut, holding on to the last fucking stump. Okay, that's what protecting the spotted owl did. It went from a place where life was kind of in jeopardy to a place where life would simply be wiped out and replaced with something else. In this case, cattle farms or sugarcane. Yeah, that was a success story. And by the way, that mostly happened under Ronald Reagan. So, oh, but conservatives. I know conservatives are some of the biggest commies you can meet, you piece of shit. I have a link to an article from ebony.com. I'm not going to read it. It deals with a trauma monkey. I don't like talking about trauma monkeys that much. That's why I don't even create separate posts for them at this point. But why not mention a trauma monkey? It's about a doll called the Natasha doll that's getting created in China. It's a rubbery little doll baby. Comes in different colors. Lots of people are getting them the blue color, the red color, the green color, the yellow color, the brown color, all kinds of colors, but there's also a black color. And they're buying the black baby, and they're squeezing the black baby, and they're going on TikTok, and it's making people balk. Why are they doing this? And it's a George Floyd disaster. Folks, this is a trauma monkey. This is a low rent. We're talking lower rent than using the White House for a UFC single wide celebration. This is way lower rent than that. I would ignore it, and you would say, well, Dan, why'd you bring it up? Because I thought it was dead ass fucking funny. Last subject, I think. So I mentioned the porn, the doom porn that surrounds the water shortages. And again, folks, I think these could be 100% directionally correct, but also designed to be confusing and maybe even to mislead on purpose. If you're asking me, does Las Vegas have a future? There's only one future for Las Vegas and much of the Southwest, and that's free energy. That's it. With free energy, you can desalinate the Pacific. You can fix whatever problems are existing in your local microclimate. With free energy, you can create whatever world you want to. With free energy, you can solve all the insoluble problems, because with free energy, you can do anything. There are no limits. You can recycle everything if you have enough energy. All you need is a plasma. The problem is generating plasmas for recycling is really, really expensive. But with free energy, it's not so expensive. So with free energy, almost every problem we face, to include food, water, and air, gets solved. And then you can go out into space and it's easy to go to Mars. It's easy to go to Mars. It's easy to go anywhere. Then the only problem you need to solve is how do you go there fast? That's it. Free energy is one of these pathways, if it were possible, to that next state of civilization, say type one, whatever. And for all intents and purposes, hydrocarbon energy, oil specifically, has been like free energy. Not the same, but it has been an incredible energy boost to human civilization in the last couple hundred years. The problem is those years are in their own way dwindling. For whatever reason, I don't really want to go into it because people have a lot of sideways beliefs about it. So there's a lot of stuff out there that deals with water, deals with resources in general, like oil. But there's a lot of this fear porn around water shortages. But there's also a lot of fear porn around just poverty. I mean, general homelessness, the prices of things, And these channels have just popped up. They're sort of ubiquitous. A lot of them are just clear and obvious AI generated. Some of them are very sophisticated AI. Like there's this one woman who has a channel. I say woman, I'm not sure. I think it's an AI. But there's this one channel that has a woman AI who kind of just says a lot of non-committal bullshit while showcasing a lot of these tiny videos of other people talking about their situation. And their situation sucks. But in general, there's a common thread. And all of this garbage, there's a kind of Hollywood ending. If only we fixed the corporations. If only we had more socialism. And if I try to explain to them that the socialism and the communism, as it really happens in the real world, is why we ended up here, their eyes gloss over. They don't understand. They don't understand that all that debt is what killed us. And every single government situation ends up kind of socialist and broke. That's it. All these HOAs end up in the same space. Nobody wants it, but that's what happens. Anywho, getting back to the subject. You could listen to some of these videos and say to yourself, this is true, this feels true, and it does, especially when it comes to prices. But I need you to just ask the question, why are so many videos showing people on the wrong side of the car driving? They're Americans. But I'm coming across a lot of these little snippets that show up in these bigger videos. So these bigger videos are like aggregators, AI aggregators. They're aggregating the good grief, why are things so bad bullshit. But a lot of these good grief videos look sketchy, specifically when I see a lot of Americans driving on the wrong side of the road, driving the wrong side of the car. And then when you look at the signs going by, I don't know what it is, but it ain't English from like, you know, Iowa. And it doesn't imply necessarily that it's bullshit, or at least 100%. I have no doubt that people get paid to make videos all around the world, AI and otherwise. And really, the best AI video is going to be based in something you actually shoot yourself. It's not going to be 100% AI. The 100% AI is so god-awful terrible that it's fairly easy to detect, you know. No. The stuff that's going to be good is going to be a little AI on top of stuff you shot yourself. So whether it's green screen or not, the good AI is going to fix a lot of glitches. In some cases, people don't even want to fix that glitch about being on the wrong side of the vehicle. I don't know. Be careful, folks. The thing about these narratives that they're spinning is that they have a lesser catastrophe kind of ending. That's what should indicate to you that they might not be true. Doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but the version of reality where all we have to do is vote one more time and we fix it, that's probably not going to happen. I know. I mean, I could be right about the first great white shark attack in the Puget Sound. First great white shark fatality in the Puget Sound, summer 2026. That's a prediction I'm making. I am 70% sure. But that's not that sure. That's a little better than 50-50. But I'm 70% sure that we will see the first great white shark fatality in the Puget Sound this summer. It's not that I want to see it happen. Nobody wants to see anybody eaten by a shark, especially if it's, you know, old people or children. That's terrible. But sharks do eat old people. Sharks do eat children. It happens. It may not happen where you live, but there's a place where people live today where crocodiles and alligators and other types of fish attack and kill people. And it's poignant, and it's tragic, and it's sad. And sure as shit, you can make a Spielberg movie about it. Sad movie. A Homestead Journey is the name of the channel, and I have a link to a video in it. Folks, be careful. Right now, they're doing what grifters do, and it's really just the brilliant grifter move. They're using a lot of the truth that's all around them as part of their fodder. This is brilliant. It doesn't really tell you for certain what's coming, but it does tell you that they understand that it's hard to hide what's happening. And when you look at something like the memorandum, the MOU, fuck, that's like, MOUs are like atmospheric rivers, like heat domes, like super El Niños. MOUs are a kind of newfangled bullshit. Like, instead of counting whole points, we look at, what, basis points, right, Fed? MOUs are a new kind of bullshit to describe microstates of war. But they're propaganda. They're nonsense. There's nothing about this MOU that is meaningful at this point. It is far more likely, if this is a legit conflict, that they are back at war within a few weeks. And as far as the escalation goes, there is only one direction for it to go as far as the West is concerned, and that's nuclear. We simply don't have the resources to invade Iran. We don't have the resources to bomb Iran out of existence. We've tried that a few times with a few other countries. It doesn't really work. Eventually, we end up leaving, and we leave behind a nation in a worse situation than before. But this time, I don't think we're even going to get the choice. I just don't think it can happen. We do not have the ability to do it. The only thing we could really do would be to use nuclear penetrators. If we go down the road of using nuclear penetrators, these are nuclear weapons designed to attack bunkers. That's all we could use on these complexes. And there are a lot of people who would legitimately say that even that might not work. Me personally, it's such a grotesque subject, I don't even want to look into it. Whether or not you could use a 1 megaton penetrator to attack that granite city, Yazd, that's a half a mile or a mile under rock, who knows? But the fellow at the bus stop, he was tapped in to a radio station 1 billion years old, as I was told, sending us a signal of love and peace. We can get through it, baby. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, my dear friends out there in outer space.